caller number 14, because I believe that was the first jersey number that DA ever wore back in the day before he became the famous number 89. He wore 14 back in the day. 832-430-2WIN. 832-430-2WIN. We go to the Byers Barricades hotline right now. DA, do I have that right? You were number 14 at one time, were you not?
Well, that is very correct. I also wore another number. Do you know what that was?
17.
17 on my way out.
On your way out. And then they're like, no, we're going to need this number because 5 years from now we're going to sign Brock Osweiler and we're going to give him number 17.
Cold-blooded. They didn't give me nearly as much money, though. I think they gave me $170,000. Well, I'm not sure if that works, but maybe something like that.
But the fact that they signed Brock, I mean, it still makes you in contention for the best number 17 in the history of the franchise. Let's face facts.
That's pretty good.
So DA, I'm sitting here in the studio, and I got this box of swag from the XFL. I got like a hat and a T-shirt and a letter basically saying, hey, anytime you want to have us on to talk XFL, like a lot of nice stuff from the XFL. I'm curious, if you had gotten cut by the Texans back in the day and you didn't become then a 6-year NFL wide receiver, if you got cut your rookie year, would you have played in a league like the XFL to try to kind of keep things going, or would you have cashed in the chips or just kept trying to go and make your NFL dream come true?
That's a good question. The only option was the Canadian football, the CFL, when I was around. There was arena football. We actually had Donovan Morgan on our team. I don't know if you remember. He actually came from arena league. So I think I would have stuck with it for a year or two just to see what my options were. I think I like all these leagues popping up. I think there's a lot of great football players that don't get an opportunity to play. Obviously, not all of them are going to survive. I think one of them does. And then I think arena should come back. I find arena, arena is back, but I think it should be even bigger. I find it pretty entertaining. And I think gambling is going to have a lot to do with helping these teams kind of stay relevant and stay fun and make it a little more lighthearted, whereas the NFL is obviously the most serious, biggest business of them. But I would have done it. I always wanted to finish my career and go play in Italy in that, that John Grisham book, Playing for Pizza. I just wanted to travel all over Italy with my shirt off, like freaking Joe Namath, just guaranteeing victories wherever I want, play offense and defense, quarterback and safety, and just go out like that.
Would you have used an Italian accent?
I think I would have been a different person in every city.
There you go. That's a good way
to do
it. It's
like a new name, and like some places I don't speak English, some places it's only German, even though I don't own German. That's what I just would have done.
Yeah, and then chronicled it on social media. So, DA, you mentioned the gambling. Oliver Luck has made no bones about the fact the XFL is going to embrace the gambling movement. If you had to bet on one of these alternative leagues, we know the AAFL starts up in just a couple of months, in February, I think, the Charlie Ebersol League. If you had to bet on one, who would you bet on to survive this whole thing?
I tend to follow the dollar when these things are involved, and Vince McMahon has committed $500 million to football, so I'm going to go ahead and place my bet where all the other money is. I think the XFL, while it probably sounds kind of the cheesiest because people remember it for like being tied to WWE and like maxing out the entertainment value, they've also learned and gotten beaten up once before and learned what the issues are with starting a league, so they do have the benefit of that as well, which I think is important.
DA, let's talk about the Texans for a moment. It's certainly worth noting that as much as they've turned their season around and have maintained a comfortable lead atop the division, in the 3 games out of the 12 they've played, or 13 they've played this season, against what you would call elite quarterbacks, Luck twice, Brady once, the Texans are 1-2. And coming off what Andrew Luck was able to do against that Texans defense on Sunday, I think we talked about it a little bit yesterday, certainly is cause for concern moving forward, because you're going to see high-level quarterbacks in the postseason. I'm not sure how closely you looked at what Rack did defensively against Luck, but there was a lot of zone defense there, and Luck just found the spots. Even when there were more DBs out there than wide receivers, they found the open spaces. Would you do anything differently against a quarterback of that caliber than what we saw Rack do on Sunday?
I mean, I'm not going to I never want to say there's blame for teams losing or that specific players deserve blame, but I think everyone in Houston rightfully so holds that front seven up to higher standards than the back end, and I didn't see them disrupt enough passing lanes, getting Andrew Luck off of his spots, get out of his first reads and finish as many plays as I expected and saw earlier in the season. And so I think that's kind of where I lean, less than like him picking apart a defense, because you could say, oh, they go man, why are we leaving, why are we leaving our DBs on an island? They go zone and a good quarterback picks them apart. So a good quarterback's going to pick you apart regardless. That just means you got to get into his face. And that's kind of what, knowing who we have up front, I kind of lean on them and say it's up to them to kind of get, disrupt Andrew Luck, disrupt the Tom Brady's and help that defense out even more than the back end.
DA, as a former slot receiver, I want your opinion on this. It feels like, just staying with the Colts game for a second, this was a game on Sunday where it felt like the Texans were having a hard time unlocking things in the passing game. We know they miss Will Fuller being that down the field threat, but Kiki QT being out with the hamstring injury, what does Kiki QT, or really any capable slot receiver, because they were down to Joe Webb playing slot receiver for them in this game, what can a capable slot receiver do for this offense as it's currently put together?
Well, first of all, it's an understanding of what the defense is trying to take away. And sometimes your job on a lot of plays is to open up someone else or give someone else more space, right? Is that, you're the last read on something, so you have more time and more patience, and your job is to get that first read even more open. Stretch the top of the field or stretch the vertically or stretch the field horizontally by bringing a defender out of a zone or attracting a certain defender to a certain direction. So that's a lot of your job as a slot. And then it's when you're the number one target, you are the number one target, right? Like the quarterback is looking for you on this whatever second and seven. You are the number one read. It's almost you down to the back. And so you just have to have a guy that's got a lot of wiggle, got a lot of ability to get open regardless of what the coverage and leverage is. And that's why you always want your first guy there, Kiki QT, because the further you go down the list, not that the Joe Webb's not a good football player, but he's not really known for his wiggle and ability to get open on third and seven. So it really takes away certain options. Now you got to go outside. They could leave Joe Webb with less attention, put more attention on the outside, and take away those guys a lot easier. Now who do you have left? You have a tight end or a back coming out of the backfield who necessarily don't always have that good leverage that slot receivers can get. So that's the big issue, right? Is you need someone just like any receiver, their ability to stretch the field horizontally, vertically, and also just take and win one-on-one matchups.
We were talking a few minutes ago about seeing DeAndre Carter get his bell rung, and he winds up leaving the game and not returning. They're down to Joe Webb at slot receiver. You ever seen anything like that, or a guy gets his bell rung at the goal line and has the wherewithal or his wits about him enough to make an appeal to the referees for a flag and then ultimately is determined to have been concussed and is not allowed to continue?
Yeah, you see a lot. You get hit in the head, and the first thing that I think you immediately go instinctual, so because you're not really thinking as much. I look at the one, and it was never flagged or never called a concussion, but to me it was clear when Julian Edelman took that big hit in the Super Bowl, and when he got smashed by his head, but he still somehow stayed on his feet, turned around, and ran for another 20 yards. He just instinctually knew, don't fall and keep running this direction. He had a 50-50 chance that he was going to run the wrong direction, in my opinion, but he picked right and ran, and he looked like a great play. But you just kind of instinctually do something after you get hit in the head, and then you slowly figure out, like, man, I feel drunk. This is probably not how I should feel out on this football field. And they've done a much better job of diagnosing those guys and making not only the team and them, the player, aware, but other players aware of how to avoid these hits and what you shouldn't be doing. So it's an unfortunate part, byproduct of the game, but that's under the brakes when you play a receiver.
You speaking from personal experience about those feelings on the field, you've experienced this?
Oh yeah, I got hit in the back of the head week 17 by Brandon Merriweather against the Patriots. I remember seeing the ball like an inch from my hands and thinking touchdown, touchdown. And then I just remember looking up and seeing Dr. Lowe and Dr. Muntz, and Dr. Muntz was talking to me. He's like, do you know my name? I was like, of course I do, Dr. Lowe. He's like, no, that's the other one. And I was like, dang, I'm not going to play anymore, huh? And he's like, no. He's like, I'm like, oh, did I catch the ball? And he's like, you did not. I was like, dang it. I was like, all right.
DA, can I just tell you, you did not.
So clinical.
That was the last game of the season in 2009, and my kids were in town for Christmas, and we went to that game, and as you know, you were their favorite player, still are.
Yeah.
And they were so disappointed watching you walk around the sideline trying to find your helmet to go back in. They're like, DA's not going back in, is he? I'm like, I don't think so.
No, you just kind of see, that's why instinctually you're like, oh, I have my pads on. You might not say even be looking for your helmet to put it back on to play, but whenever you have your pads on, you always are holding your helmet. So you're just like, where's my helmet? So you walk around like just asking everyone, and they treat you like a little toddler, like, oh, you don't get your helmet today. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
And then 5 minutes later, you're like, where's my helmet? Did you put it on the sideline? They're like, you're not going to get your helmet. You're like, okay.
Yeah. It's like when you valet park and your keys aren't in your pocket all night. And you're like, oh crap, where am I? Oh, that's right. The valet guy has my keys.
The thing I hate about valet parking is when they turn your automatic lights on to on and then drain your battery.
Yeah.
That drives me crazy.
Rich wouldn't know
that's
this.
Fine. Rich
has never valet parked in his whole life.
Oh no, I have. I'm just adamantly opposed to it.
He has an 87 Cadillac that he still drives around.
That's true.
He doesn't have automatic lights.
No, I've had the experience, Sean.
Valet parking?
I just don't do it anymore if I don't have to.
Yeah, you are adamantly against valet parking.
Yeah, I don't trust anybody.
Yep.
Well, top down in that Cadillac, no one wants to drive that thing anyway.
This is true.
A boat that he's driving. All right, DA, what's going on the Average Sports Show tomorrow night?
You know, we're going to go with the counterpunch. Basically, how resilient are they? Do they need to hit the reset button? How do they bounce back from this? You know, they got hit in the mouth. I think it was something everyone knew might happen closing out the year. You had some interesting quotes from Jonathan Joseph talking about, you know, this might be a good thing for us going into the playoffs. What you don't want to see is them limp into the playoffs. So how can they turn into a counterpunching team? They've been exposed. They beat the Texans. Okay, and what do we do to react to that? How do we, catch our stride going into the playoffs? The counterpunch. What are the Texans going
to
do?
Great stuff. That'll be a lot of fun to listen to. This season's been a lot of fun to kind of juxtapose to the Average Sports Show on Wednesday night. So if you haven't listened to it, 8 o'clock on Wednesday nights, tune in. David Anderson and Sean Bajani getting it done. DA, we appreciate it as always. Have a good show tomorrow, man.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
All right, there it is. David Anderson joining us for his weekly visit.